welcome one, welcome all, step right up, ladies and gentlemen, Portal Gaming Podcast, episode number 108. This one is entitled, Always With You, What Cannot Be Done. Howdy everybody, I am your host, The Brant, and Portal Gaming Podcast is a proud member of the Dice Tower Network. This podcast brought to you by a store called The Portal in Manchester, Connecticut. For more information, you can log on to www.timemachineportal.com. Check us out on Facebook, The Portal, and on Twitter, at PortalGaming60. Hello, everybody. I am here for this episode, 108. This is after our big Extra Life event that we had this past Saturday, which was totally, totally awesome. I did not end up doing like a recap episode on that. I don't know, I've kind of gotten to the point, we've done a lot of these and they're amazing, but it kind of feels like you have to be there and be part of it, so we really want you to do that. I know for some people, distance or time may prevent that, but really would love for people to come and be part of this, or your local Extra Life or charity event, whatever it would be at your store. But yeah, it's so busy and I'm part of things and there's a lot of people in and out and taking even 5 minutes at a time. Sometimes that 5 minutes is just my breather in between events and or games. And yeah, so I just didn't get to that. But the event was awesome. Raised a whole bunch of money. There was like 40 something people at the start. And there was like 15 people that went all 24 hours. And there was over 200 people that came through the store that day, which was really, really cool. I didn't play much new. I believe the two new games I played was Discover Lands Unknown and Between Two Castles of Mad King Ludwig. My short review on both of those is they both were games I was hesitant towards, and they're both games that I liked more than I expected on the way out, in terms of that. Between Two Castles, I think, definitely just kind of will ride. It's good. It's right in that... you know, if you have like a Seven Wonders or a Paper Tales or Between Two Castles, like you could just rotate those three. Maybe you only need one of those, so that would be how that is. Discover needs more plays. I did a solo play recently that I wasn't as big of a fan of, but I definitely anticipate that to be better. And I'm actually hoping maybe to play that right after I finish this recording. So we'll see how that goes. Hey, those weren't even my reviews, though. I played a lot of the games there. I played Lisboa. I played Teotihuacan. I played The Estates. All three of those games continue to just be really, really good. Lisboa, my favorite of the three, if you are counting at home. Let's see. Yeah, so it was just a really exciting event. Hopefully, next episode, Brian is on. We could talk a little bit more about that and how things went. Maybe what we changed up, what we would think of for next year. But all in all, it was just awesome. Harrison just knocked it out of the park. I mean, just everything he did, so many of the events. The tournaments were really popular. It was a 25-person tournament for Terraforming Mars. There was Cockroach Poker, Railroad Inc., Giant Mat, or Giant Version, Altiplano, just so many things. If I start naming them all, it'll be so much. We're going to roll right into next weekend where we've got our Keyforge pre-release. So this is going to be $10. You get a deck before it comes out, and then there'll just kind of be some open play. If there's a group that makes sense with, you know, 8 or 16 or 12 people or whatever, around 1 o'clock, we're going to do a tournament of style. But otherwise, it's just come in and open play and check out Keyforge. This is quickly rising in the ranks of one of my favorite games for this year. I definitely have a soft spot for the two-player dual card games, CCGs, LCGs. I'm always looking for kind of a next one. I still love the Star Wars LCG, even though it's dead and people don't play it. Even the CCG, but the LCG I think I even like better. I really, really like this game. And the prospect of just walking into the portal, buying a deck, or two people buying two decks and then playing and switching and playing again is really, really exciting to me. And then obviously having that deck that I replay a whole bunch, like, ooh, I really feel like this is my best deck. Let's try it against yours or my favorite two or whatever. And Kathy's down. She definitely wants to try this, and it's intriguing to her. I mean, the $10 price point is just great. You know, I guess you got to find another person to play, but way easier on the overhead. So really excited for that. So that's happening Saturday, November 10th. At 1 p.m. at the portal. I think you could buy... We have like 36 decks. So once they're gone, that's it. But I think you could buy, you know, most of the day there. Other upcoming events. I think that's a majority. Oh, big one. PAX Unplugged. Kathy and I will be going to PAX Unplugged. Larry, who's frequently on the podcast, will be there. And a host of people from the store, you know, friends of the podcast and whatnot. Brian is iffy, but going away from a toy store in December is a terrible idea when you're the manager. So he really needs to be back at the store. He's toying with the idea of trying to come down for a day since it is, you know, like a 3-hour ride from us. But we'll see. But Kathy and I will be there. We are working at the Dice Tower booth, 2840. Man, they put out the layout for that for PAX Unplugged. I cannot believe it. Easily double the number of booths, if not 4 times the number of booths. And pretty much all the big hitters, the heavy hitters, are there this time. So, from what I hear, Essen Games are going to be there. It's going to be crazy. It's going to be tough to keep my wallet closed. but it's going to be an awesome time. And like I said, Kathy and I will be at the Dice Tower booth. Let's see. Tom left it open to me to put my own times in. So I believe on Friday, the first day I'm there, 11 to 1. And then back again at like 3 or 4 in the afternoon. And then the second day we're doing like 1 to 3. Mostly I wanted to work with different people. So I looked when there were people that we hadn't worked with prior. Just to kind of see everybody and whatnot. But we will be there. Come and find us there. Say hi and whatnot. And then we're just going to wander the halls kind of separately. I think following me around, I know a lot of people now, and Kathy kind of finds it boring. Like I'm talking and she doesn't know what about or who to. So she's just going to go look for her own thing. So I got new business cards. Boom, got Kathy's name on the business card so she can go around and talk to people on her own and whatnot. So that should be really, really fun. So we will be there, let's see, November 30th, December 1 and 2, I want to say is what it is in terms of that. But yeah, if you're going to PAX Unplugged, that looks to be really fun this year. So that should be exciting. All right, this episode I want to talk about, I've got a pile. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 games. I've even got more that I played. So there's almost too many to talk about, but other games I have played recently that I will get a chance to talk about are Orbis and Subatomic, Caper, Drop It, Blue Lagoon. Did I talk about Symphony No. 9 yet? Dice Settlers? Oh my gosh. Oh, it's overwhelming. There's so much. Brass Birmingham, Detective. These are great games. So, yeah. But I've got a pile here of 7 games I want to go through. And then I want to talk about reviews. I want to talk about the positives and the negatives and how I review, or the idea of recounting recent plays or whatever it is. Because at the end of the day, like, this is a job for me, but it's really a hobby. I just like talking about games and come on over and let's talk about games. And I almost have that approach, like the living room couch approach. I just want to tell you about a game, my experience with it. Was I excited? Was I not excited? And that's really where I'm going for with reviews in terms of that. So I want to kind of unpack that and the idea of positive and negative reviews. Probably gave you a little bit there. Anyway. Okay, I'm going to go right down the pile, I think. All right. So first up, I've got 2 games here from Devere that they sent to me. The first one is Origami. So Origami is a small box card game. Really like the theme here. You're folding paper origami. And so essentially, you're creating a tableau in front of you and drafting cards from the center. So on your turn, you can draft a card from the center of the table. I think you can pick up... Oh, I know. They have little folding costs in the corner, how many folds they are. And you can take 4 folds worth of cards from the center. And cards range from, I believe, 1 to 4 folds. So you can take those cards from the center, put them in your hand. Or you can fold an origami from your hand, so it has a folding value or a number of folds it needs. So typically they need twice as many folds as they are worth. So like a 6-fold or something that is worth 3 folds needs 6 folds to be played. So you have to discard a bunch of cards, and then you play in your tableau, and you basically just have 2 running piles. Some cards have special abilities, or they have an immediate ability, or they have an endgame ability on them. And so whatever's on top, if it has a permanent ability, it'll stay as long as you keep that column open. Then you keep playing. You go through the deck twice because you're pulling cards out, so the second time it's, you know, half as big. And you shuffle through, and then when the deck runs out there, you play out your hands. And I think you get to do the classic, like, Parade does this, and Pete Motz does this, where you get to play 2 of your 4 last cards or something like that and add them. and then add up your points. Really, you're just getting points from those things that you folded, and some of them have bonuses. Oh, plus one for everyone in this pile, or everyone of this type. That's one of the key things, is there's different types, and they're all animals. So they have, like, forest creatures, desert creatures, water creatures, and you play with a number of those equal to the number of players. So in a four-player game or a five-player game, you'd have five different sets. And they play off each other. So generally, like, desert will play off of desert cards and whatnot. So they kind of chain together with special abilities. Real simple, real light. I like it. I think it's a good one to play. Like, we played at a restaurant a little bit. You know, family weight-ish. Might be a little bit with the text and the comboing to figure out. But it was fun. You know, balance-wise, I'd have to see and what things figure out. I think our game was a little lopsided, or one of the games I played with Kathy. So, but all in all, really neat game, Origami. Next up, they sent me Minute Realms. So Minute Realms is kind of a similar idea in that it's a light card game, a little bit bigger box, and they're kind of tarot-sized cards. And this is much more focused on drafting and trading. So it's like Vikings are attacking this village, and you're building up the village. And so everybody gets a card dealt to them, and two are played to the center. It plays over eight rounds, and then most victory points wins. And so on your turn, you can either play the building that was in front of you, or you can trade for one in the center or other players. If you build the one in front of you, it just tells you the cost, and you place it in your tableau. And that'll earn new points, or coins, or whatever. If you trade, then there's some effect. Sometimes if you trade with another player, you get coins. Sometimes you have to pay them coins. And other times, Vikings attack. So you take a little token, put it face down, and you don't know how much the Vikings are going to attack for. Your other option is if you don't want to buy a building, you can just flip one face down. It's now defense. You do that through four rounds, rotating the first player. And after the four rounds, you flip all the Viking raid tokens up and you see the total. Ah, it was a 0, a 1, and a 2. So they attack for 4. You need to have 4 defense. All cards that you play face down have 2 defense. And so if you just had played 2 cards face down, you would defend that. If you don't, they destroy one of your buildings. So you have to pick one and destroy it. Then you would go on to the next half of the game. And in the next half, it's pretty much the same thing, but after that, you total up all the Viking raids, and if you have that much defense, you earn that many victory points. So you take the 4 from the previous 4 rounds, and you may add the 3 or 4 new ones, and now if you have 7 defense, then you will score 7 bonus points. So it's a little bit even better. You can score points at the end of the game. Yeah, it's light, it's fast, it's quick. I think I liked Origami better overall. It's interesting because there's a lot of interaction in this, but it just kind of happens, and there was a card in there. I think I scored 9 points. It's like 9 points minus number of coins you have at the end of the game. So I just bought a big card at the end and got rid of my coins, and it seemed kind of easy to do that. So I'm not sure where those are. It's a great game to have on the shelf, pull off, you know, little filler in terms of that. But I definitely liked Origami better of those two. All right, heavy hitter up next. This is Holding On, The Troubled Life of Billy Kerr. This is from Hub Games. And this one and Rescue Polar Bears. I'm going to thank Jason Perez from Every Night is Game Night for letting me borrow these games and try them out. Yeah, so thanks to him for letting me borrow those. All right, Holding On, Troubled Life of Billy Kerr. Definitely a highly anticipated game. This is a co-op. There's a lot of co-ops I'm going to talk about here on the way through. This is kind of an action selection resource management game. The theme is end-of-life care for Billy Kerr, who showed up, and you're trying to keep Billy alive and take these memories of his life. The theme is wonderful. Mechanics fall down a little bit. So what happens is you lay out some card. Every turn you lay out a card, and then the head nurse has to pick other nurses to cover that shift. And then those nurses together will kind of decide, do we want to give him medical care or palliative care? Medical care will, you know, kind of keep him alive or from losing health, and palliative care will give you the resources you're looking for to kind of piece together his life. This part is interesting. It goes over 3 shifts. You get bonuses. You can bring in extra nurses. You can send people home to get rest. You can work overtime. That part's pretty interesting. I like that element of the game. The other piece is you're trying to put together these fractured memories, and you have to get, I don't remember what the partial memories and clear memories. And this part is you're just randomly drawing for decks for what you're looking for. And so it's kind of push your luck, but it's really just luck. There isn't even really push your luck because there's no benefit to pushing further. There's just what you need to win. And so it's this balancing act of, do we want to have... Because basically you have to get a partial memory to get a clear memory on top of it. But the partial memories on their own aren't worth anything. So you can get a lot of partial memories, so you increase your chances to get your clear memories. Or you can just get a couple partial memories and keep drawing for those clear memories. So there's kind of that push your luck element. And it just becomes tedious after a while. It's very long to get there. I've played the beginning scenario twice, and I haven't moved on. I am going to. I may end up just solo playing, which it's not really my favorite thing anymore, but I want to get through and see more. But the initial impressions were not very good. That just straight luck element was just really distracting. It would be one thing if it was just kind of quick and, oop, I didn't get that, or oops, I did, or we won or we lost, but it like goes on and on and on and on. I know I've heard from some that it gets a little bit better in terms of that, and it removes that element. But yeah, this did not match the hype for me of what it was intended to be. I still think the theme is there. I think the heart is there. I think the story is there. I like the nurse shifts. I just don't like this drawing from these decks being the main focus. So that was that. But I know it'll still be a big popular game, so we'll see where that kind of squares out as we go through. I guess I'm going a little quicker with these today because there's a lot. All right, next up is Ganymede, which I know Lucky Duck Games sent this to me. And it says, sorry, we are French, is the other publisher on here. So this is a space resource management game. And what you're doing in this game is you're trying to get astronauts from Earth to Mars and eventually to some space stations where they score. And it's just kind of very heavy draft-oriented. There's a whole bunch of different cards you can draft. And when you draft a card, you get a bunch of abilities where you can add more astronauts to various planets, typically Earth, or move astronauts from one planet to the next. And then you lay cards in different places to collect various resources to kind of build up a tableau and an engine. And then eventually you're trying to get them over to the space station where you need either four... Darn it. I think it's three of a kind or four different... two of the same or three different. I'm sorry, I don't remember. I think it's two of the same or three different. And then you score one of these space shuttle cards, and they give you endgame bonus points for certain set collection. And then you get a new card. You can kind of add those out there. Real quick, real light on that end, but really pretty solid engine building. The engine build is really fun in this game. That's all it is. It's like a real fast engine build, and then the game is over. But it definitely has that interesting, like, as you're drafting these cards, they're associated with colors. And if you get one of each color, you get, like, a big bonus. One of your shuttles just goes for free. You don't have to put any astronauts on it. And then the other is you can double up, and if you keep taking the same color, you get to trigger those actions over and over again. Or, no, the action you trigger, you do X number of times. So if I have four cards in that pile, I get to do it four times. So you can really build some interesting engines and do a lot of things. And then the astronauts actually all have roles. There's like pilots and medical and all the different things. And they're represented by the colors of meeples. So nobody has their own meeples. There's just all these. I thought it was fun. And you know me, I'm not big on the like, oh, this was light and fast and quick. And that's what makes it good and easy to teach. I think the engine build is really what this game is relying on. And it's a pretty solid little engine. So Ganymede was fun. That's a 2-4 player game, and I think it says like 20-40 minutes, and that sounds about right. So perfect for a game night filler if you're looking for that engine build. Maybe play this prior to Terraforming Mars or something if you want to have that theme there. So I really like that, Ganymede from Lucky Duck Games. Next up is Unicornus Knight. So I got this at Gen Con. Still got the Gen Con games coming out from AEG, and I've really been looking forward to Unicornus Knights. I saw like a Rado playthrough, and I saw some others and heard really good things about it. It's a co-op game where basically this princess is trying to expel the emperor. She's going to take him out. And so you set out all these tiles and you make this big board, and the princess, she is automated. She's just going to make a beeline for the emperor, and your job as all her cohorts is to try to help her. You're all these heroes in the land trying to help her along the path, kind of nudge her to one side by getting in her way or eliminating the enemies in front of her and whatnot. So I played this as a 5-player game, and it definitely suffered from the, like, too many things, too many cards to read, and just too many abilities to try to control and rules that were finicky. And we just kind of rolled through, and we did end up winning, but it wasn't really that satisfying. People weren't really a big fan of it. I think that this game is going to work a lot better, like, solo or 2 or 3 players, where there's just not as much happening. I know with 2 players, you end up playing 2 characters each, so that could still be overwhelming. But it just felt like 5 was so many cooks in the kitchen, it was hard to keep everybody on track, and there was definitely an alpha player, like, oh, you should do this, and you should do that, and then people felt like, well, I'm not doing anything, I'm just doing what you tell me. So I want to try it again solo. I generally enjoy what was going on there. The fate cards were interesting, but there was just so much text, and these cards are rather large. They're almost like little mini player mats, and you've got like 12 enemies out there, plus your own like 4 characters, plus the princess. So you're starting to put like 15, 20 of these cards out, and it was just a lot to read and track. And you know, anything that was like, oh, do this at the start of the round, or when you move within 3 spaces of this person, was like, oh, we would forget all that stuff. And some of the mechanisms just kind of lead to some characters are on the front lines, another on the back lines, and the back line characters can't do much. They're just assisting the front line characters. So it wasn't the best first play. I'd like to try it again, maybe solo, just myself, and see where it's at. But that was Unicornus Knights from AEG. All right, next up, Rescue Polar Bears. I alluded to this before. This is from Mayday Games. And like I said, Jason was kind enough to let me borrow this. So I have that. And it was really... this is a really neat game. It kind of presents itself as a family weight game. It's like, I guess there's some climate control, climate change things going on. But really, there's all these icebergs you lay out, and it's neat. You lay out a whole grid of hexes, and then you flip them over, and some are icebergs and some are water. And then the icebergs are kind of color-coded, not like they're white. But the center has like a little paw print that's color-coded. And you lay out papa bears, mama bears, and baby bears, basically, on the various tiles as it tells you, and it's pretty easy to know what to do. And then you've got 4 boats that all have special powers, and you're trying to move over to pick up the polar bears and bring them back to the base, or break the ice to decrease the temperature so it stays colder, or collect these little data tokens, which is actually what you're trying to do to win the game, collect 20 data tokens. And all the boats have powers, and you can power them up when you collect enough tokens. And it definitely works its way towards a medium weight game. Like, so presenting itself as family, it's above, like, what I'm thinking of for a family night. Now, I think if, you know, if you had 2 adults sitting with 2 kids, they'd be fine to figure everything out and whatnot. I got a chance to play this a couple times and play it solo. It's a hard game. That might be what's thinking of that. The theme is very presentable, but the game is pretty hard in terms of what's happening. So there's a lot of little abilities, so there's things you can miss, I think. But it's overall, it's not bad in terms of all that. And the game is really enjoyable. It's quite fun. And, you know, thematically, like, who doesn't want to save polar bears? That seems really good to do. So really had a good time with this game. And there's a lot of elements going on, like, how am I going to save these polar bears, but get the data tokens, but do this. So you really have to have some control. The boats did seem to me like they ended up taking on roles. Like, you're going to constantly be shipping bears, and you're going to be picking up data tokens, and you're going to be breaking ice. And they kind of had their defined roles. But I don't think it's a big deal if you know it going in, what all the different things are. But this is going to be getting more playtime. I really like this effect. I'm going to bring this Thursday night to the portal, because I think people are going to find this more enjoyable than it might present itself as a kid's game. It's got a good thing to it. So that is Rescue Polar Bears from Mayday Games. And last up on my long list of reviews here is a game from Artipia and Stronghold Games, and this is Kitchen Rush. And it was interesting. We got a store demo copy of this, and I think it sat for a little bit and then picked it up to bring home. And I got a Nintendo Switch recently and bought Overcooked, and we've been playing that as a family. I know Zephyr gets a little more frustrated with Kathy, and I've been enjoying it, even though we yell back and forth at each other. But it's, yeah, after where we laugh it off, it's kind of, that's the fun of it, is to kind of try to take over. And Kitchen Rush really is that Overcooked game as a board game. So you've just got all these sand timers, and you've got to lock into various things. So it could be the maitre d' and get new orders, and you can be the chef and be cooking the orders, and or I guess the waiter or waitress kind of gets more orders and places them out. And you can go shopping, and you cook, and you go into the storage and get the things you need out. And you're just recipe fulfilling, but you might run out of the things you need. And you're gaining, like, prestige points and fulfilling orders. And you play over four rounds, and you have to pay everybody every round. So you're basically trying to complete orders to get money to be able to pay your workers. And your workers are your sand timers. And so you're paying all of them at the end of every round. You could get more sand timers, but that means you need more money, but you could do more things. So it gets kind of hectic and crazy. Obviously, that's where the fun lies. It can break down very quickly and like, oh no, we ran out of that item and we don't have enough and you used what I needed. And so it can kind of just go smoothly or just go awry. I don't think there's going to be a midway, like, nah, we did okay. I think it's going to be either like, we did really well or we just fell apart. Because once you start to fall apart, you just kind of fall apart. That might be a little bit of the downfall, is if by round two or three, it's really not going well. Round four is not going to save it for you. So there's that element. But it's really fun. And I have to say, like, after playing the digital version, there's definitely something to this game. Sorry, Overcooked is not the digital version of this. They're the same theme, but they're not the same game. But there's definitely something to that idea of, like, sitting on a couch and doing that with people, and sitting and actually grabbing all the tokens and bumping into each other creates a whole different element, as opposed to structurally trying to maneuver, you know, a controller on the screen. So I think if your family has enjoyed Overcooked, if you've played that in whatever formats, I don't know. I think it must be on Steam, PC, Mac, Switch, PS4. The video game thing I'm just getting back into after years of not playing much other than Final Fantasies. I've played almost all of them. I think if they enjoy that, they'll enjoy this. And you might be able to put a good learning curve on this. Like, I think it's a 4-minute timer or 5-minute timer, but I feel like maybe it's 4 and then it's 5 in solo play because I played both. But you could just increase your timer to give people more time for that, or even put another limitation on it, you know, if you're teaching people or whatever. So really quite the fun game. Kitchen Rush is getting people to really work together. There's no alpha player in this. You could start screaming, but it's time is a great way to break that up. Woo! I think I'm tired. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 games reviewed for you right there, or recounting recent plays, as well as the two up front that I talked about in the Extra Life Day. So that is a lot. Let me take a little break here and get a drink, and I'll be right back. All right, addendum here is I have Zephyr's cousin Jimmy, and he's actually one I got to play Rescue Polar Bears with, so he just wanted to give you a 1-minute update on what he felt about Rescue Polar Bears from Mayday Games. Hi, Jimmy, how are you?
Good.
Tell us about Rescue Polar Bears.
Rescue Polar Bears is a fun game because you get, like, rescuing polar bears is, like, fun and, like, the boats, you can, like, upgrade them and stuff, and I just think it's fun rescuing the polar bears and, like, breaking the ice.
What did you think about the complexity, like, the difficulty of the game? Did you like that, or did you not like that?
I liked it because it was, like, it wasn't way too easy, and it wasn't, like, this game's too easy, it's not fun. It was like, it had a challenge to it, and it wasn't like, too easy and you would get bored. It had a challenge because you had to use, like, your helicopters and stuff.
Yep, and what did you feel about, like, learning the game? Did it seem like a lot at first, or it wasn't too bad, or you liked kind of learning the game as you played? What did you think?
I liked kind of learning the game as we go because, like, it wasn't too hard to, like, so you were, like, getting overwhelmed and stuff.
Awesome. And so what's your rating on the game? Like, do you want to give it a 1 through 10? Do you want to give it a number of stars? Thumbs up? What would you say?
I would give it a 7 out of 10.
7 out of 10. Nice. Awesome. Thanks, Jimmy. Alrighty, so I just wanted to take a chance here to talk about reviews. I guess I'm talking about my reviews, although I watch a lot. I consume a lot of board game media specifically. Washing dishes, doing things around the house. I have headphones I put on, and I listen to a ton of podcasts, you know, all the way through. If a new podcast comes out and I hear about it, I try it. Obviously, nobody can consume all of them, and I'm not even making that a goal. There's weeks where I'll have to skip some, so, you know, sometimes even some of my favorites I have to decide based on what is the content of that one. Or I really, really like listening to people's reviews and or their, like, kind of upfront recent plays. And I think I really like a casual format. Now, don't get me wrong, I appreciate a thorough format for sure. Heavy Cardboard probably generally being the most thorough of them all, and I absolutely appreciate what they're doing there. But I like hearing people's experience. I like seeing whether, like, is it the theme that came out to you? Is it these mechanisms? Is it the brain burn? Is it something new and innovative that was interesting to you? Or even what made the game not work for you? Because what might work for other people in terms of all of that? So that's kind of part of my take, is it's not just, well, this is how I do reviews and this is how they should be done. I don't feel that way at all. This is just what I enjoy doing for my reviews. And so as I was alluding to before, I said, I'm really into that casual, like, we're sitting on the couch. I want this to feel like, hey, we're both here and we're in my living room and I'm telling you about my experience of playing the game this morning or last night or whatever it would be, and just kind of bringing that out to you. You know, I definitely feel like explaining the mechanisms is important. I try not to be too thorough on that, but I want that to be part of it. Like, I don't want it to just be, I liked it or I didn't like it. But I want it to be, you know, like, I'm looking at this stack here, like, holding on. I love this theme, but the mechanisms just didn't work. Ganymede, there's not really a theme here. What's the game going for? It's going for that engine build. And so I'm going to focus on that piece of what I really feel like the game is pushing towards. You know, maybe I hem and haw a little bit on some things, like a Unicornist Knights here. Just kind of referencing all these because they're in front of me. Where it's like, I'm going to try it again, but, you know, at the end of the day, I don't think that review was super positive that I gave on that game. So that's really the format that I enjoy, and what I like to listen to is just, what were people getting excited about? Why were they choosing to talk about this game? All those kind of things. Now, I am getting a lot more review copies and demos in the store and playing with a larger swath of people who are backing Kickstarters and picking up games themselves and whatnot. And so, you know, I'm playing a lot larger. I still think, all in all, through and through, I'm an Omni gamer. And I will play a lot. I was just playing at church on Sunday morning. I was playing the 8-bit box with some kids who were there. And just sitting playing something for 15 minutes with kids, you know. So still trying to get those kids' games in and whatnot. So I still feel like an Omni gamer. But you do notice the more you're playing and the more new games you're playing, that there are some that aren't as positive. But I don't come across a lot of games that I absolutely detest, that I just can't imagine why somebody made this, or who this would be for, or those kind of things. I find that most games, I'm pretty happy. If somebody picked this up, I'd be like, yeah, you're going to really enjoy gaming. You know, I might compare to, last week I talked about Chronicles of Crime, and I think that game is great. Recently, I've been playing Detective, and I think that game is amazing. And so if you asked me one of these two, which would I play? I would play Detective. I think it's much better. But if somebody picks up Chronicles of Crime, they are going to find board games to be awesome. Like, so, you know, it's easy to compare two games and, or, sorry, it's easy to just compare two games and say which one I like better and assume the better one is the better one. But it doesn't mean the other game is bad. And I think that's really important. So, yeah, there's that element. So, that's what I mostly like to hear. I guess it's really what I like to say. What I like to hear is what people want to tell me, for the most part, in terms of that. I like seeing run-throughs of games. I think that's interesting, too. I'm not the best at kind of watching all the way through, but I like to get a feel for what's happening with the game. I like to have access to a game. So I definitely know that I cover things that people don't have access, but I feel like at least it's close. Like, Holding On came out at Essen. It's not out here yet, but it's close, you know? So I feel like if I talk about that, put in somebody's brain, it's going to be close. So, you know, a Kickstarter preview is just a little much at times in terms of the length. Like, all right, well, this game's going to be on Kickstarter now or in a month, and then it's going to be 6, 8 months, 12 months, and then you're going to get it, and then it's going to be played, and then, you know, you're talking about something that's so far away. It's kind of like a movie trailer for a Marvel movie. It's like, great, here's the trailer, but I can't watch the movie for another 8 months. So there's not a lot to me there. But, it again, not super worried about that. So in terms of positive and negative on reviews, I think more often than not I come across positive. And it's funny, this is always my exact point, and I was watching Vassal's live Q&A, and somebody said, why don't you do more negative reviews? And he was laughing and saying, I feel like I do a ton of negative reviews. In fact, the most, probably. He's like, I review the most games. But he was saying, but if somebody just sits around making negative reviews all the time, why are they in this hobby? And that's my thing. This is what I'm doing with my extra time. Yeah, you know, it's a job and I get perks and I have copies that are coming to me and that's all well and good, but it's not why I'm doing this. You know, I could very happily take the 550 games, and I know Kathy'd be happy with this, and just play those out. But I enjoy playing new games, and really the only way for me to play a lot of new games is if they are offered to me in some way, you know, or friends have them, or certainly I back Kickstarters, buy games as well. I'm not, you know, devoid of doing that. This is not a, you better give me something free or else. But I'm doing this for the fun. I love talking about games, and I don't really want to sit around talking about a lot of stuff I don't like. So if I dislike most games, why am I board gaming? What am I doing? Like, why don't I go to video games if I think they're so much better? Or why don't I go to outdoor sports if I think they're so much better? Or do a sports radio show if I think sports are better? Or if I think education is the most important thing, I should be talking about that. I guess I don't think that board games are the most important thing, for sure. But, yeah, that's just my point, is I better like most games. I find that 70 plus percent of games are really good, and then, you know, it's that top 20 that I'm like, this is amazing, the top 20%, these are so much fun, and so it's only like 10% of games that I'm really just like, oh gosh, I don't like that, and even when I don't like them, like a Rising Sun, that's just not for me, I would probably still play that game again, even though I know I'm probably going to be frustrated and hope I'm not annoying people at the table, or, you know, some other games that I haven't enjoyed over time. Flip City and Viceroy and some of these other games that just, they just didn't click for me, but they click for the people, and I understand, I totally know the appeal of Rising Sun. It's not like I'm sitting here thinking, this inherently is a bad game. It is not. It is inherently a great game that just doesn't happen to appeal to me for whatever reason. And so again, I'm not against saying that I don't like something, but I just don't really have heavy reasons to be, I don't have any major reasons to be heavy-handed about why a game is so terrible. And if I do think it's terrible, I probably never even picked it up off the shelf anyway, or I read through the rules and I didn't, or I did a quick play of something that maybe was 10 minutes and I just didn't bother to recount my recent play, and all that. So I'm not avoiding, I'm not, there's nothing in here in my contract or anything with Brian that and the portal that says you must review games positively, or we back this, or we have 17 copies, so tell everybody it's good. I would never do that. I just, that's not worth it, you know, integrity wise. And just, I don't want to lie to people. Like, I I like games and I want people to play games. And I don't want to tell people a game is good and then it's bad. And then they're like, oh, this kind of sucks. I don't really like board gaming. I want people to get into board games, you know. My brother just recently asked me, they were playing Catan. He bought it for his boys. And he's like, oh, what are some other games? And, you know, right off the top of my head, I'm just pulling out some great hits. Okay, here's what you should get for family. Pandemic, King of Tokyo, Ticket to Ride, Century Spice Road, Fabled Fruit, and Villainous were the games that I thought of. Like, those are all different style games. You'll see co-op in there. You'll see dice rolling. You'll see heavy theme. You'll see mechanisms, right? Like, Century and Pandemic are really more mechanism-based, even though they have theme. And I think those are great games. Ticket to Ride. And those are the games I'm going to suggest to people right off the bat, you know, to get into the hobby. Codenames if it's a group of adults, but I find that it just doesn't work with kids. So, you know, if you don't have teenagers and up, I don't suggest Codenames. I don't think it works. And I don't know. I may be wrong, and people might not like those games, but I try to just go to kind of those standard ones. So then there's this whole idea that I always say we recount recent plays, because I probably do feel like at the end of the day that, you know, playing game 5, 6, 8, 20, whatever number of times is how you get the best feel about the game. But it's just not possible. So sometimes I've only played a game once, but I still want to talk about it. It's not like one play doesn't count. You know, I may have missed something, I may not have gotten something, but it might be a game like Kingdom Death Monster. I played that once, and it was fine, and the game was good, but I just don't get back to the game again. And so, should I not talk about it? I don't know. Like, if that's how people feel and they don't want to listen to me because I only played something once, that's fine. I sometimes usually say if it's only been one play or whatever. And I generally try to play games more than once. But that's why I put this idea of recount recent plays. Am I saying that that's not a review? No, it's totally a review. And when, if I say a movie once, I'm going to tell you what I thought about the movie. Now, it's more typical that people will see a movie once, maybe twice. We're not asking anybody to watch a movie five times. And board games, it makes more sense to play something, you know, three, four, five times. But generally, you can tell if I really liked a game versus I liked a game versus I'm good with that game by the number of times if I talk about that I've played it. So I think by the time I reviewed Root or Rise of Queensdale, those are two that jump into my head from the summer, I had already played, you know, 5, 7, 8 games of it. So right there, that tells you I probably like the game a lot. And I'm not trying to hide that from anybody. If somebody came up to me and said, how many times have you played that game? Oh, so you must really like it. Oh, I really like it. You know, that's the whole point of this, to tell you that I really like things, not to make some behind-the-curtain idea. So I don't know what other reviewers are going for, and I can appreciate both ends, people saying, only played it once, I don't want to talk about it, or I'm going to play it 8 times, or I really want to tell you about games that are bad to help you avoid them. I really want to tell you about games that are amazing and just talk about my favorite 10%. I mean, at the end of the day, reviewers have opinions, and they have opinions on how they should do that, and I don't really want to dictate those terms to somebody. I suppose I can dictate by whether I watch or listen or participate, but yeah, that's kind of my lowdown on all of that, and my reviews and my concept, and so that's what we're going for. So I guess let me know, you know, throw me a tweet on Twitter, send me an email, portalgamepodcast@gmail.com, and say, yeah, I've really appreciated what you're doing, or I wish you would do this, like saying the name of the game again. I think I'm pretty good at that. I always try to wrap up one and move on to the other by saying that. I know those are little things that people like, and I like that too, so I try to do that, but you know, it just let me know. How's it been going? How the listening is? Whether you feel like it's beneficial to you or not? Because I'd really like to be useful to you. That's my main goal in what I'm doing. So there is that. Okay, I think I will end there with this episode. Should have Brian and Kathy back shortly. I've got a series of games that Kathy and I have played that I definitely want to go through with her. Want to have Brian on and maybe get his opinions, his feelings, his reaction to the Extra Life Day and anything that he's played. He played a lot more new. I know he got to play the Great Western Trail expansion. So we will hear about that from him. But I think that's it. So until next time, I am your host, The Brant, and I hope that you step into the portal. Portal Gaming Podcast is a product of Time Machine Toy and Hobby / The Portal, which are located at 71 and 60 Hilliard Street in Manchester, Connecticut. This episode was recorded on November 6th, 2018. Please send any questions to us at portalgamingpodcast@gmail.com. Portal Game Podcast is a proud member of the Dice Tower Network. So for more awesome podcasts, visit www.dicetowernetwork.com. Thanks for listening, and thanks for voting, America. Good night.